From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Stephen Edward Watts was just 15 years old when he was shot and killed by Calumet City Police in his own home nearly a decade ago. He had been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, and his parents made a 911 call because he was in mental distress. In the spring, Stephen's mother, Donalene Powell Dickens, and her daughter, Renee Watts, sat down at StoryCorps in Chicago. They talked about how Stephen had skills as a computer coder, had created a game that he uploaded to YouTube to show off to his sister. Stephen's mother also describes the day her husband decided to call 911 as Stephen was having a mental health crisis. Here's his sister, Renee, speaking to his mother at StoryCorps in Chicago this year at WBEZ.
When Stephen was diagnosed with autism, what resources did the doctors have available for you?
The doctor always said, don't aggravate him. Have the police assist you. Put him in the ambulance so he can get medical treatment. Knowing what I know now, that was the wrong thing to do. When my son is going through a crisis, he do not need police officers, ambulance, fire department. Those are the last thing they want to see, because even the siren, even the lights can trigger. It can create a crisis where there shouldn't be one.
Describe the last time you saw Stephen.
Oh, that one is heavy. The very last time I saw Stephen, I came in from work that morning. I was working night shift. I make him breakfast. We talk about going to Jamaica. I gave him his medication. He pick a star. He always pick a star of his choosing to place on the calendar, a special calendar, when he take his medication. And I went to bed. That was the last time I saw Stephen alive, February 1st, 2012. The next thing that wake me up out of my sleep was a loud bang sound. And just as I got out of my room and into the kitchen, there was two police officers at the door, and there was two more at the top of the stairs and two by the back door.
I think it's really hard because I don't talk about Stephen.
I know.
I don't describe him to anybody.
I know. It would have been great to see the person that he would have been. And I do think he would have had a lot to offer, and we will never know. And I love him.
Again, that was Danalene Powell Dickens and her daughter, Renee Watts, speaking as part of StoryCorps Chicago through WBEZ about Danalene's son, Stephen, who was killed by police in his home during a mental health crisis. Now, a new law in Illinois, known as the Stephen Edward Watts Act, aims to prevent these tragedies by providing trained mental health workers to respond instead of or alongside police. The law will take effect in January, and already some police departments are having social workers respond to emergency calls, including the University of Illinois Police Department. Their REACH initiative, that stands for Response, Evaluation, and Crisis Help, provides clinicians trained, dressed in plain clothes, to ride along with officers to mental health emergency calls. Megan Cambrin is a licensed clinical social worker and UIPD's first crisis outreach coordinator. Megan, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. We appreciate the opportunity.
Also with us is University of Illinois Police Department Behavioral Health Detective Elma Halpin. Elma started as a patrol officer there in 2013. Thank you so much for being with us as well.
Well, thank you for having us.
And joining us from Springfield is Sarah Anderson with Memorial Behavioral Health. Sarah leads a program where MBH clinicians partner with the Springfield Police Department. Sarah, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, as ever, you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. The number again, 800-222-9455. Megan, I'm going to begin with you. You started going on calls with the U of I Police Department this year. What sort of calls are you responding to?
We respond to a number of different calls, and our program is somewhat unique in that our social workers are in the car with the behavioral health detectives on patrol. And so they go to not only the identified mental health calls from dispatch, but also other calls. And sometimes we realize that calls that did not come out as mental health calls kind of turn into that. And so we respond to, you know, some that you might think of like a check welfare or a response to folks who are expressed suicidal ideation or suicide attempts, but also calls like suspicious persons calls or domestic disputes, remove subject calls, those kinds of calls as well.
Elma, you've been an officer with the department for several years now. How did these calls go before the REACH program, before there was a social worker responding in the squad car?
Honestly, when I started, we didn't have as many CIT calls. And within the last, I would say, 5 years or so, we've definitely noticed an increase.
And CIT stands for?
For crisis intervention calls.
Got it.
So people dealing with mental health. And within the last 5 years or so, we've noticed definitely an increase in those calls. And honestly, it was difficult for, as a department, to put ourselves in such big shoes, because we want to help people, but maybe we didn't have the right training. So then, officers started taking crisis intervention training. It was a 40-hour week course, and we got more tools. So we learned things that would help us. You know, we say we have tools in our around our belts. So that was another tool that we would use throughout these calls. And I think that's definitely helped the department. But still, having people like Megan and the crisis counselor that I ride with, Amanda, have them take over and use all their experience is just so much better for officers. And for the people that obviously we're trying to help.
Yeah, and for the people in crisis. Sarah, you partner with the police department in Springfield. Can you talk about the need for this in that community?
Yeah, so we too are seeing an increase in these types of calls and in the need for functioning in this purpose. So what we've been doing for the last 3 years is mostly working alongside Springfield Police Department. Very similar to what's been explained, is not only just responding to that immediate crisis, that immediate need, but doing that follow-up after. So after the police have already responded, going back out there, making sure that we're continuing to help that person stabilize in the community, linking them to any resource or service, any outpatient service, to help them ongoing meet that need that's there, in hopes to prevent that crisis or continue to de-escalate the crisis that they're presenting with. And of course, helping the officers with just the problem solving. It's a number of different scenarios that can arise. So helping the officers too with knowing what resources and services are available.
Sarah, both you and Elma mentioned an increase in these types of calls. Do you have any sense as to why there are more of these calls now, Sarah?
I think we're becoming more aware. I mean, we definitely have the pandemic and the ripple effect of the pandemic. I think it's obviously taking a toll on so many. And at the beginning, we said it's not a matter of when you're going to have depression or anxiety. It's now it's a matter of when, not an if anymore. So I think it's just the ripple effect of that. And then just people are becoming more and more aware of what it is. We used to chalk it up to other things and criminalize it. And now it's seen that these are people who are truly in crisis and need help and need services to help them through it.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about alternatives to just having uniformed police respond when people are experiencing a mental health crisis. We're speaking with Megan Cambrin, a licensed clinical social worker at the University of Illinois Police Department and the first crisis outreach coordinator there. Also, behavioral health detective Elma Halpin, also from the U of I PD, and Sarah Anderson with Memorial Behavioral Health in Springfield, which partners with the police department there. And as we've been discussing, there are alternatives to calling the police altogether when somebody's having a mental health crisis. And that's where another concept in this space comes in. It's known as living rooms. These are safe, quiet spaces where people can go in communities around Illinois if they're experiencing mental health emergencies. And then they can get connected with resources. And I want to introduce another voice into our conversation now to talk more about this. Lauren Phillips is the team lead for the Renaissance Living Room in Chicago. He's also a licensed clinical social worker. Lauren, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for being here as well. And Lauren, you might be muted on Zoom there, but I want to ask, you're the team lead at, as I said, the Renaissance Living Room in Chicago. This is one of many living rooms around Illinois. Maybe you can just begin by talking about the concept. What exactly is a living room, and where did this concept come from?
Ryan, thank you for having me. So living rooms are safe, comfortable, non-hospital, non-police alternatives to when someone's experiencing a mental health crisis. The Renaissance Living Room, like other living rooms, is staffed by peer supporters as the primary focus. So that's people who have their own lived experience of mental health or substance use recovery. The space it's comfortable. It's not, it's free from the noise and overstimulation that you would encounter in a traditional hospital setting. And it's designed to be a place where people can get a sense of respite and regroup. And then when they're ready, work on a plan for what they want to do when they leave, or to follow up from this crisis.
Okay, and Megan, I wonder, is the one of these living room type places, is that somewhere that, if police respond, they would try and connect someone with a place like that, or how does that work in your experience?
Well, we actually don't have experience with a living room. There isn't one in our area, and it would be a wonderful resource for us because, as Lauren was speaking, I thought, what a great alternative and option for folks responding to those in crisis. So ideally, yes, I think that would be a wonderful, wonderful option.
All right. We asked our listeners what they thought of this concept, and we heard some really interesting things from them. And one of them came in by text message. And I do want to warn our listeners, this text does contain a discussion of self-harm. Okay, so that being said, it reads, quote, "I am so thankful to learn of this legislative initiative. Several years ago, I attempted suicide via over-the-counter painkiller overdose. Friends found me, called 911, and a police officer was first to arrive. The officer made small talk with my friends as if I wasn't there, after telling them in an overtly dismissive and condescending tone that the OD wouldn't kill me, it would only cause liver failure. Beyond the intense emotions I had already been feeling, these words embarrassed me and made me feel foolish, angry, and defensive. If someone had responded with even a modicum of compassion for my situation, I would have at least been able to maintain a feeling of humanity and dignity in that, my darkest hour." Thank you so much to the listener who shared that. And Elma, I wonder if you can respond to that as a behavioral health detective police officer. Are patrol officers, is everyone being trained to be or urged to be more compassionate in these kind of situations?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to, the caller who texted, because that sounds horrible. I want to say most, I don't know the exact number of officers in our department that have gone to the training, but I want to say most of our department does go through the CIT training after, I think, at least 2 years on the department, just because there's so much other training at the beginning. But after you're settled, then they'll put you through that 40-hour course. As far as that call, that's horrible. We do respond to those calls. Unfortunately, it's a common call. I would just, like I said, I would apologize for the officer who did that. Nobody should respond to, even if an officer or first responder, fireman, whoever's on the scene, everybody should be compassionate to that person who's going through that crisis. Personally, I don't think that that response was at all warranted. Yep, that's all I have to say about that one.
Sure. And we need to take a break in about a minute here. But Megan, I wonder if you have experience with maybe people who have had negative experiences, you know, people with mental health issues who have had negative experiences with the police. How do they respond when they say, see you coming now?
Well, I think, unfortunately, there are folks who've had negative experiences when they've asked or reached out for help. And that could be with other mental health professionals, too, right? It's not just first responders. But what we know is if we can have a good, positive first experience, that really can pave the way to promote more help seeking in the future. You know, if I have a negative first experience, what are the chances that I'm going to continue to seek help, right? It has a negative impact on them moving forward and reaching out. And that's what one of our goals is to, when you have first contact with us, we want it to be a positive one. We want it to be one that leaves you saying, I felt respected and heard, helped, and I want to keep asking for help to get better.
All right, we need to take a break. We're talking about alternatives to having just first responders, just police respond when someone's in a mental health crisis. There's a law that's taking effect in Illinois about that, and some departments are already doing it. We're talking with people from the U of I Police in Champaign-Urbana, as well as someone who works with the Springfield Police Department. We're going to continue this conversation in just a moment here on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about alternatives to having just uniformed police respond or other first responders respond when someone's experiencing a mental health crisis. A number of departments are now partnering with social workers, behavioral health specialists to also respond and follow up when people, when there are calls to check on people who might be, or for whatever reason, respond to people who seem like they might be having a mental health issue. We're speaking with Megan Cambrin, a licensed clinical social worker, and behavioral health detective Elma Halpin. They're both with the University of Illinois Police Department. Sarah Anderson is with Memorial Behavioral Health in Springfield. And we're also speaking with Lauren Phillips, team lead for the Renaissance Living Room in Chicago, which is a literal safe space that people can go when they're experiencing a mental health emergency and get connected with resources without having to go through first responders, without having to call 911. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455. If you have a story, some experience in this area you'd be willing to share with us, we would love to hear about it. 800-222-9455. Sarah, can I ask you what does response? How does it actually work from, you know, the moment someone picks up the phone and dials 911? What does the response look like in Springfield?
So right now, the way we're functioning, I have a very small team, so it's not always this way, but right now what will happen is the police will respond first, and then if they notify the officers that work alongside us, or if those officers are working, we utilize our neighborhood patrol officers who are also CIT trained. So if they're working or the ones that are aware of the call coming through, they will contact my team for assistance. We will either go out or assist them over the phone, do what we can to assist the officer and the individual or the families with de-escalating, doing what we can to stabilize them. If for some reason my team's not available to physically go out and assist, we too have a living room, and then our front door at our office, we also kind of repurposed it as a crisis hub, so to speak. So if for some reason my team's not able to physically go out and assist, the officers can and do bring them to our office for our other teams to coordinate. But it's doing everything we can to, like I said, continue that de-escalation, help get them out of that crisis, do what we can to stabilize them in the moment, do a safety plan, and then after doing that follow-up. So going back out, making sure, you know, either the next day or the next week, making sure that they're still okay. And then that's helping linking them to the ongoing services. So this crisis arose, what can we do to help them ongoing address it and ideally help them prevent it again. There's also times it's not as common, but there's times where someone does need hospitalization, just like with a medical emergency, there's always going to be a circumstance where someone does require a hospitalization. So what my team also does is help the officers and the individual go through that process as well. So that way it's a little bit more of a warm handoff, knowing that that in itself can be a traumatic experience. So doing whatever we can to, both help the officers, help the client, help the patient with making that experience as most trauma-informed as we can and as smooth as we can. And then, of course, doing a follow-up after that as well to the person in the community.
And what about in Champaign-Urbana there, Megan and Alma? The U of I Police Department doesn't only respond to calls on campus. Sometimes it assists in the community and in Urbana and Champaign and even in the county if need be. What does that look like? Are you in plain clothes when you're responding to these? What would someone's experience be?
Yeah, that's right. We respond not only to the university, but the surrounding community. There's an established mutual aid agreement between our department and others. So when calls come in that we think our reach team would be helpful in, they get dispatched immediately to those. And so our officers on patrol, remember, they're still patrol officers. They're just designated to respond first to these types of calls. So they are dressed as an officer. Our social worker, however, is wearing, you know, khaki pants and a polo shirt. So they respond to those calls. And once we get out to those calls and once the officers deem the scene to be safe, the officer then steps back and then it becomes a social worker scene to address and talk with those folks. It's not a criminal matter at that point. And so there's no need for our police officers to be involved if they don't need to be. And so they really do step back and allow the social workers to kind of take that scene and kind of do their assessment, figure out what's going on, and determine sort of next steps.
I wonder, is there ever friction, like, you know, where maybe, I mean, there are certainly, I would imagine, calls, whether it's, you know, some sort of public nuisance or, you know, urination or whatever it might be, where there could be a criminal charge. Is there ever sort of like a back and forth about which direction to go, crisis intervention versus taking someone to county?
Well, I think that's interesting. It's more likely the conflict will be in the community member who called in the call for service,
sure.
Opposed to our team members disagreeing on
what should
happen. A homeowner,
business owner, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
So our officers and social workers really are on the same page where we want to deflect involvement in the law in the criminal justice system at all means possible. They understand that these folks who sometimes we have repeat contact with or folks who are struggling with a mental health crisis, they're not engaging in criminal behavior willingly, even if there is some there, right? And so at all costs, we want to divert any involvement in those systems and really sort of usher them towards the helping systems that can be a benefit. Like I said, though, there are some conflicts sometimes with community members who believe things should happen a certain way.
Interesting. All right. I want to read another text we got from a listener. And once again, I'll just mention 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to call in now. But this person said, quote, as a former pastor, a few years ago, I was called to an incident with a mentally ill man. I realized immediately that I was out of my depth. A police officer arrived moments later. I asked him if there was anything we could do. The officer was very kind to the man's family, but said other than arresting him, there was nothing he could do. Eventually, the man ended up in jail after another related incident. When I heard that police departments were beginning to consider pairing up with social workers and mental health counselors, I was relieved. I think there's a gaping hole in the system that could be greatly served by this sort of pairing. Thank you to that person for writing in. Sarah, I wonder, for people who are civilians in this situation, right, what sort of ways can people do, what can people do to help someone in distress, you know, that doesn't involve calling emergency services in the first place?
So here in Springfield, we have a few different options. As I mentioned, we have our physical front door in the living room where someone could bring. You don't need a referral, especially for our living room. It does not matter what insurance you have. As long as you're 18 or older, anyone could walk in or bring someone into that. for my team, that's really kind of how, what stemmed the creation of my team 3 years ago was this need exactly of our community knows that the need's there. The families know that these individuals need assistance, but how do we get them there? How do we navigate the systems in place? So what we do is we take calls for the community. It's not just for the police. We can take those calls. And then we also have an emotional support line as well. So anyone just needing some guidance, some assistance, it's not an emergency crisis line, but it is an emotional support line where they can help individuals navigate these situations as well.
And Lauren, same question to you. I wonder if you have a response to that. You know, how can people help their loved ones or maybe even people they don't know who are in a mental health crisis without calling the police?
Well, I think, as was just said, helping the person get to a space like the living room is one option. And being with that person, being reassuring, being supportive, and then also, I think sometimes having some knowledge of what to expect going into a situation can also help that person to tap into their own coping skills and to de-escalate. For instance, for our living room, just knowing kind of, that when somebody comes in to our space, they can leave at their own, of their own free will. That they won't be coerced into care or to treatment that they don't want.
I see. Okay.
That's one step. And just knowing that there are, that there are places and people, who can be there for them.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about alternatives to having police alone and first responders alone respond to people having mental health problems. A number of departments around the state are working with social workers and other mental health professionals to respond in addition to, or sometimes even instead of, police. We're speaking with Lauren Phillips, who's the team lead at the Renaissance Living Room and a licensed clinical social worker. That's in Chicago. Also Sarah Anderson, who's with Memorial Behavioral Health in Springfield, working with the Springfield Police Department there. And behavioral health detective Emma Halpin and crisis outreach coordinator Megan Cambrin, both of the University of Illinois Police Department in Champaign-Urbana. And Lauren, I wanted to ask you about, I understand a strategic plan at the Renaissance Living Room that's aimed at working to end homelessness over the coming years. Can you talk about that and how mental health is tied to homelessness and housing insecurity more broadly?
Sure. So those two topics are interrelated, right? If somebody is, experiencing homelessness, it's going to, they're not able to find a place to sleep at night consistently, not able to access regular food, not having those basic needs met is going to exacerbate or potentially create somebody's, mental health symptoms. And likewise, mental health, we know in our society, people with mental illness, are more often experience poverty. And so, those both conditions sort of feed themselves. In our living room, we're located in Chicago's Austin neighborhood. About 75% of the guests who we see and people who come to us, we call guests, are experiencing homelessness or housing insecurity. Our focus often is just helping them meet their basic needs in the moment. Do you need water? Have you slept? Do you need a place to use the bathroom? Starting there and then kind of building up.
Sure. Sarah, what about in Springfield? Is housing insecurity, homelessness, Is that interconnected with people having mental health crises that you're aware of in your area?
Absolutely. The way we look at it is that mental illness and substance use, it's a symptom of homelessness. So it's in order for us to help someone and help them find housing and help them maintain that housing, is that's a piece of it as well that we have to, we as service providers have to address, as well as the mental health component.
I wonder how have you seen the reception for this sort of, I mean, this program, the REACH program in particular, but crisis intervention training in general among your fellow officers at the U of I Police Department? Is this something that people are largely getting on board with? How's that been?
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, there's some officers that are really good at talking to people and others that are really good at other things. So in order to benefit, like I said, people that we're trying to help out in the public community, I think it's best for the people with the training, the better training, like Megan, Amanda, our crisis counselors, to do that part of this job in order to best help everybody involved, including the officers.
Is coverage an issue? Do you have people available 24/7, or is it depends on who's on call on a given day or something?
So Amanda rides with me, and so she works the same hours, the same days that I do. I'm on day shift, so it's approximately 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then we also have two other officers that share another crisis counselor. They work the evening hours, so starting at 4 to about midnight right now, but hopefully we'll actually have that extended to about 2 a.m. So not all days are covered, but most of the day is covered.
Okay. Well, just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. Megan, I want to end with where we began, which is the Stephon Edwards Watts Act. It's going to require all Illinois municipalities to coordinate 911 and 988 services with the goal of providing community care. I wonder what you think of this law and whether it's going to change the way that you provide services.
I think it will. There's a lot of good things in this act, and this bill, and it's been enacted and put forth for righteous reasons, for justified reasons. I think some of the concerns that we have as a co-responder model is involvement of officers. This is an unpredictable job, right? When you're sending a mental health professional into the community during a crisis, and we want to make sure those folks who have offered to be the helpers, who want to be the ones to get in there and to help out, we want to make sure that they're safe. And one of the ways that we do that now is by sending an officer to help secure and make sure the scene is safe, but then step away. Potentially, the way this bill is written currently, that wouldn't be an option for a lot of the calls we go on. Another thing is some of the calls that we get are high risk, and so officers are still going to go to those calls because of if there's a weapon present, the danger, the threat level. In those situations, officers will still go. So we still need to make sure that we're giving the officers adequate training. We're supporting them the way that the REACH team is doing currently. And so I think we're missing a response, if it's a police response, because it's a higher level of threat. We need to make sure that those officers who are going are still supported and trained well, even if the social workers aren't going to be there.
All right. Well, we have to leave it there. Megan Cambron, Elma Halpin, Sarah Anderson, and Lauren Phillip, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st for this important conversation. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.